Welcome, and we're here with Richard Fontaine of the Center for New American Security. We're here as a part of the World Affairs Councils of America conference, so thank you so much for taking the time today to speak to the group as well as to do this quick interview with us.
No, thanks for having me.
Great. So we heard from you a little bit about the impacts that the recent elections will have on U.S. international relations with different countries. And it's something that I think really needs to be talked about, and we haven't heard too much in the previous few days as to what those challenges and issues may be. So I just wanted to get a few of your thoughts on what that will look like moving forward.
Yeah, so there will be a return to divided government, as everybody who reads the newspapers or watches TV knows, with a Democratic House majority and a Republican Senate majority. The Republican majority in the Senate will go up by some undetermined number of seats, where they're still trying to work that out, but it'll be a couple probably. And it'll have implications for a number of foreign policy issues. So the most obvious of these is trade. President has renegotiated or negotiated successor to NAFTA, the USMCA, as it's called, the Mexico-Canada-US Free Trade Agreement, or trade agreement, I guess. And that needs approval by both houses. And so Senator McConnell has said that he does not expect to take that up in the remainder of the, in the lame duck session, the remainder of this year. And if that's the case, then that means that the president needs a majority of Democrats controlling the House to pass that piece of legislation. They don't necessarily need a majority of Democrats, but they need, then they would have to gang up with Republicans. I think that's probably likely, especially given that the alternative is a pullout of NAFTA, according to the president, and there's farm state Democrats and so on. But the Democrats are in a position to shape the politics of trade. We're currently in trade negotiations with Japan. The administration has talked about a deal with the United Kingdom after Brexit, maybe one with the EU. All of that would require congressional approval, and so puts the Democrats in more of a driver's seat. And then they can also stop some things. So the administration has talked about the possibilities and the free trade agreement with the Philippines, for example, and I don't think there's going to be appetite among the incoming Democratic chairman to move forward with such an agreement with a country that's got such a bad human rights record. And so I could go on to a couple other areas, but trade is a pretty obvious candidate.
Sure. So for NAFTA, do you envision that there might need to be some retweaking of the new agreements to get it through a Democratic Congress?
There can't be. They consider it under fast track authority, so it is unamendable once they actually take it up. In theory, the Democrats in the House could issue a set of specific demands about specific provisions and try to force the administration to go back to Canada and Mexico to negotiate changes to the underlying agreement or some side agreement. In fact, Bill Clinton did this with NAFTA on labor and environmental stuff. He had a couple of side agreements. But for most intents and purposes, it's going to be a take it or leave it kind of thing.
Okay, great. So along with trade comes the relationship with China. Do you see any differences moving forward in how the administration will be working with them or trying to confront them in the international sphere?
It's striking that the president gets pushback on almost all of his foreign policy approaches, whether it's Russia or Iran or Saudi Arabia or international agreements or whatever, but almost none on China, despite the fact that the administration has taken a hard and increasingly hard line with China. The vice president just gave a big speech laying out a kind of a bill of goods about Chinese behavior. And there's disagreements to some degree about the objectives of policy with China, whether it should be, as the president has prioritized, the trade deficit and trying to get China's cooperation on North Korea, or whether it should be on the economic side, looking at China's unfair investment rules, theft of intellectual property, forced technology transfer, or its security-related activities, whether it's island building in the South China Sea, its expanding military, its cyber attacks. So there's disagreement over what the priorities, or human rights, of course, the Uyghurs and detention camps and so forth. So there's some disagreement over what the objectives should be, but there seems to be very little disagreement about the overall tone and that the sense that there's a reckoning in order between the United States and China's relationship, not one that would lead to war or conflict, but one that is going to lead, I think, to a much more competitive and frostier relationship than before, and it will probably have the support of both Republicans and Democrats.
Okay. So there's been a lot of talk on the news about how this may open up the possibility for some investigations into the Russian connections outside of the Mueller probe. Do you have any thoughts on whether you see that changing relationships or creating further difficulties in working with Russia on many of our strategic goals?
Well, the Russia file has become extremely politicized, to state the obvious, and so the House Intelligence Committee's reports and investigations into Russian meddling in the 2016 election had Republicans and Democrats essentially at each other's throats. If the Democrats taking the majority could look into continued Russian interference in American democratic practice, that'd be a very good thing. Separately, you have all of the personal stuff. You know, the Democrats have said that they may look into Russia-Trump links pre-existing the presidential campaign, or Saudi links with the Trump family or something like that. And that has the potential, I guess, one, of uncovering facts of which we don't know now, which could complicate things. The other, politicizing these issues. But it's just very hard to tell where that goes, because we don't know what the fruits of those investigations, if they take place, will actually look like.
Sure. Okay, one final question for you. The assassination of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi has been very big in the news. Lots of differing opinions on it, we'll say. Do you see any changes on our strategy moving forward with the relationship with Saudi Arabia over this issue?
I do, and I think it's already started. The Secretary of State called for a ceasefire in Yemen, which, at first glance, a ceasefire in Yemen has nothing to do with the assassination of a journalist in the Saudi consulate in Turkey, except that it has all kinds of things to do with it. And what it has to do with it is that this was a wake-up call about the recent pattern of Saudi foreign policy behavior for a lot of people, whether it was the kidnapping of the Prime Minister of Lebanon, or the embargo on Qatar, or the war in Yemen, which has been both a humanitarian disaster and actually has led to more Iranian influence in Yemen rather than less, even though it was designed to eliminate Iranian influence. And some of these other so-called initiatives, a lot of folks, I think, are now looking at this and saying, you know, the Khashoggi thing really focused our minds on the fact that a lot of this just is not working for our interests, certainly not for our values, but not for our interests. And then the question becomes, what do you do about it? And people are all over the map. I think the administration would like to preserve as much of the strategic relationship with the Saudis as possible while expressing displeasure or disapproval of what's happened. The best thing, and then on the Hill, the attitudes are sharper. The best thing to do, and I have some hope that this will happen, is rather than just symbolically sanction folks who were involved, but try to use this incident to actually marshal things in a productive direction and say, for example, that arms sales to Saudi Arabia or continued support for the war in Yemen is going to be conditioned on concrete, meaningful steps to actually end that war, so that in some strange way, something good may come out of this horrible incident.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. We, again, are here with Richard Fontaine of the Center for a New American Security. So thank you again.
See you in New Hampshire.
All right.